Chapter 45, containing fresh news of Mr. Greencoat. The horses, which were fresh and swift, followed the caravan road. It ran westward and was level, although the southern mountains were now near. Again and again it looked as if their foothills would encroach on the caravan track, but that was not so. There was no gradient. Not until afternoon, when the shadows were growing longer, did the horses slow down to a walk, for they were mounting a slope. From the north, too, the foothills of mountains jutted out into the caravan road, and finally the plain merged into a broad valley, and the surrounding mountains were capped with blackish-green stone. Teeth of rock pressed through the loess, sand, and gravel, as if to show what the black Gobi hid beneath its surface. The valley was strewn with a thin layer of sand, on which the trail of Ma's caravan was sharply imprinted. "Ma is not far ahead of us," said Moonlight. "He's camping tonight at Steep Rock Well, and tomorrow night at Ming Shui. He's keeping his appointment."
"So are we," said Christian.
The venerable chief turned aside from the caravan track and rode south into the mountains. After half an hour, the black cones came nearer, and spikes of rock could be seen rising from the primeval desert here, there, and everywhere. It seemed a world apart. Dumpignac threaded his way between the rocks, then turned into a valley bounded by round cone-like hills with a stream running through it, and near the stream were two blue tents. Here, too, everything was prepared. The red horsetail pennant was flying, but the tents were plain blue, and both alike. Two men were waiting outside, and they greeted Dumpignac. "Nothing has happened," they said. "Everything is going well. Tangat is coming to report at midnight." And they took the horses. "Be my guests and share my tent," said Dumpignac to Christian and Big Tiger. "Let us stay together as long as we may." When they were at tea, the men brought Christian and Big Tiger their saddlebags and the briefcase, and Moonlight said to the men, "Take down the horsetail pennant. You never can tell." The venerable chief sat motionless with bowed head, staring into the fire. His prayer beads were gliding through his fingers, his lips moved silently, and his eyes were half closed. Christian and Big Tiger went out to look around and see where the water came from and where it went to. "It's well the dog wasn't with us," said Christian. "He'd never have kept up," admitted Big Tiger. "We rode very fast." "And he'd have barked where he shouldn't." "It seems no one is to know we're here," said Big Tiger. "Moonlight has got the horse's tail taken away." "The gentlemen are very cautious," said Christian, with a backward glance at the tent. It was open, and a man was sitting at the fire, cooking. They came to the horses, which were standing at a line with nose bags on. The second man appeared over the hills, riding a camel and driving three others in front of him toward the encampment. Suddenly, he stopped short, and at the same time they heard a distant call, but could see nobody, for the valley was surrounded by hills and mountains. On the southern side, some scrub and yellowwood was growing, but farther up it was completely barren, and nothing was to be seen but the black teeth of rock. The cry was repeated, this time a little nearer, but it was quite a while before the rider came into view. His camel was stumbling along and threatening to fall, obviously completely exhausted. When the rider caught sight of the tents, he dismounted and walked along beside the camel man, who had dismounted too. "A stranger," said Big Tiger. "We must tell Moonlight," said Christian. They went back to the tent and announced that a stranger was coming along on a camel which could hardly walk another step. "Bring him to me," ordered Dumpignac, "but do not say who I am. Perhaps he knows already."
"No fear of that," replied Dumpignac. "My men are silent."
Christian and Big Tiger went to meet the stranger. He was a Mongol, tall, weather-beaten, and beardless, and the deep lines in his face were almost like black strokes of a pen. His cheeks were hollow, and he looked undernourished. His camel was even more emaciated than he, Its humps were shrunken, and the skin hung loosely like an empty bag over the protruding ribs. The man wore on his breast a finely engraved silver case hanging on a silken cord. Christian and Big Tiger saluted, and when the man took his snuff bottle from his sash, they were glad that they had snuff bottles, too. Then they ran forward and opened the tent, begging the stranger to enter. At the sight of Dampignac, he bent his knee and saluted politely, and they exchanged snuff bottles. "You see before you an officer of the old governor in Urumqi," Moonlight lied valiantly. "He has charge of the frontier post." "I thought I had already passed Ming Shui," said the stranger. "Please forgive my ignorance." "Yes, Ming Shui lies behind you, but we've come a little way over the frontier to keep an eye on Dampignac's people. Now and then we have to remind those redbeards who they are and where they belong." The stranger hesitated to reply. One could see that he would have preferred to remain silent. At last, he said cautiously, "You're right. There are people who complain of the Redbeards." "Is that possible?" cried Moonlight. "Where do you come from?" asked Dampignac casually. "My name is Dombit," said the stranger, "and I'm a pilgrim on my way from Lhasa, but heaven only knows if I'll ever see my home again, for my camel is nearly finished, and it's a long way to Jun Sunit."
"How long have you been traveling, Dombit?"
"Nearly 3 years. I hoped to be home by the beginning of the fourth year."
"I see your hardships have not been in vain," said Dampignac, bowing before the little silver casket which Dombit carried on his breast.
"I received the blessing of the Dalai Lama," said Dombit simply.
"You're a lucky man," cried Dampignac, "and it is a joy to have you with us."
For a moment there was silence, but at last Moonlight could contain himself no longer. "Where do you want to go from here, friend Dombit?" he asked.
"I'm trying to reach the path of meditation, but I've lost my way."
"How many days' ride northward is it?"
"It's not good riding straight to the north from here. You would find no water. Ride as far as the caravan road that comes from Hami. You'll reach it in an hour. Follow it eastward, and in 2 days you'll reach the venerable chief's stronghold. Ask there for the path of meditation. The fellows will show you the way. They are said to be friendly to pilgrims and poor travelers."
"I'd be afraid all the same," said Dombit. "I've been urgently warned."
"That's right," said Moonlight. "We've instructed our frontier soldiers to warn everyone. I note they do their duty. Solitary travelers, at any rate."
"What do you think, Captain?"
Dampignac did not reply. He looked past Moonlight, and it was obvious that he did not wish to answer.
"It wasn't the frontier soldiers who warned me," said Dombit. "It was someone else. As a matter of fact, the soldiers said, 'Don't be afraid. The Redbeards will give you a gift if they meet you.' And they asked me to give their greetings and congratulations to one of them who was dead and is now alive again."
"I call that dereliction of duty," cried Moonlight. "What do you say, Captain?"
Christian and Big Tiger bowed their heads. They realized why Moonlight was talking so loudly, and they found it hard to keep from laughing. Big Tiger clenched his fists. Christian bit his tongue, but the venerable chief said quite coolly,
"That's the strange thing about people. They take the worst bandit to their heart rather than the authorities who protect them. What was the name of the man to whom you were to give congratulations on the restoration of his life?"
"His name is Moonlight," answered Dombit. "And the sword, so the soldiers said, went clean through his temples, and he died. But in the night, Kalachakra came and restored him to life. That was the soldier's story, and Moonlight must be a great warrior and a good man, for such miracles are rare in our days."
"Look at me," said Moonlight. "My skull was also cleft open by a sword, but nobody makes any fuss about it."
Dombit started back when Moonlight pushed his hat off his forehead. The fiery red scar ran from one temple to the other, and Moonlight said with a laugh, "It's not exactly ornamental, but you needn't be all that scared." "It's not that," stammered Dambit. "It's the likeness. A man who had seen Moonlight described him to me." "I venture to hope," said Moonlight, "that I'm not like him." "But that's just what scared me," said Dambit. "The day before yesterday, I met two men with a horseless car, and one of them described Moonlight to me in every detail. He said he and the venerable chief are the worst criminals in the 10,000 states, but I'll see to it that the executioner's sword gets them in the end." "So much the better," said Moonlight gaily. "The gentleman will spare us a lot of trouble. What's his name, by the way?" The man with him called him Mr. Greencoat. "Oh, indeed," cried Moonlight. "I must tell you, Dombit, that Mr. Greencoat is an old friend of mine, a man whose fame fills the valleys. What a joy it would be to meet this long-lost friend in the wilderness. Where did you meet the dear, delightful fellow?" "I just came along when his car was stuck in a gravel bank between Tsing Tsing Ha and the place called Falling Wall." "I hope you helped him." "Yes, I helped him, because people should help each other. He told me to shovel, and I shoveled. He told me to carry planks, and I dragged them along. Then he was able to drive on." "And the good fellow surely gave you a princely reward." "I asked no reward. But surely, if I know him aright, he helped you as you had helped him." Again, Dombit hesitated to reply. At last he said, "Since Mr. Greencoat is your friend, we need not speak of that." "I understand," said Moonlight. "In his hurry, friend Greencoat forgot to thank you." "It wasn't that," said Dombit. "What was it then? Did he embarrass you with his generosity?" Dombit shook his head. "Since you want to know," he said, "I'll tell you. This Mr. Greencoat shouted at me, 'What are you standing there for, you lousy fellow? I have no riches to bestow on you. Go and get your reward from Moonlight, who has robbed me. No doubt you're also an old redbeard.'" "Now, now," said Moonlight appeasingly, "friend Greencoat is a trifle hard. He's a Tungan, and he knows nothing of the Mongol joss. And perhaps driving a horseless car has gone to his head. It disagrees very much with many people." "Enough," cried Dampignac. "Your Greencoat doesn't seem to deserve great praise. Let's have tea."
"May the little boys also venture to ask a question?" said Christian modestly.
"Certainly," said Dampignac. Christian turned to Dombit. "My friend, Big Tiger, and I," said he, "saw Mr. Greencoat as he passed us by at the Etsen Gaul. At that time, he had nothing on the truck except iron drums and cans."
"May I ask what load he was carrying when you met him?"
"The car was full of empty cans," replied Dombit, "except for one big iron drum which stood in the front in a corner."
"Was his companion a soldier?" asked Big Tiger.
"No, he was not a soldier," replied Dombit. "He was a small, thick-set, short-winded man. He called Greencoat 'Honored Sir,' and he wore a faded black merchant's coat."
"In which direction did Greencoat drive off?" asked Christian.
"He drove northward."
"Was he armed?" Big Tiger inquired.
Dombit laughed. "You're asking a lot of questions," he said, "but I remember seeing a gun lying in the driver's cab in which they were both sitting."
"One more question," said Christian. "I'd very much like to know at what hour you met Greencoat."
"The midday sun was shining," replied Dombit, surprised.
"Why do you want to know that?"
"It's just the way of my friend Compass Mountain," replied Big Tiger coolly, "to ask questions which have no meaning."
"Drink your tea," cried Moonlight, filling Dombit a bowl and putting a piece of sheep butter into it.
Christian picked up the briefcase with the compass, and Big Tiger stood up, too.
"We're going to have a look around," said Big Tiger. They climbed the first hill behind the tent and went down the other side where nobody could see them.
Christian took out the map and compass. "Here's Ming Shui," he said, "and here's Tsing Tsing Ha. We're here, and the day before yesterday, Greencoat was between Tsing Tsing Ha and Falling Wall.
Where's Falling Wall?
I don't know, but it must be here where the mountains begin. Do you see these pointed things that look like a toothbrush? The toothbrush is the sign for rocks, and Falling Wall must be there. And when I get home, I'll write to the map makers about it.
But what's there now? Asked Big Tiger.
It's all quite clear now, Christian assured him. It was in this valley, and he put his finger on the spot, midway between Tsing Tsing Ha and the cliff region that Dombit met Greencoat.
Where's the valley? Asked Big Tiger, for he wanted to know exactly.
It can't be seen, admitted Christian, but it must be there since Dombit spoke of a gravel bank in which the car got stuck. It's only in valleys that there are gravel banks.
Aha, said Big Tiger, silently admiring Christian's familiarity with valleys.
Dombit could ride only slowly, continued Christian, because his camel was done in, so it took him 3 days to get here. Greencoat was in Falling Wall 1 or 2 hours later, that's to say, by the afternoon.
That was the day before yesterday, said Big Tiger.
Yes, replied Christian, but what's he doing there for so long? His appointment with Ma is for the day after tomorrow. That means he's there 5 days. What's he doing at Falling Wall?
I don't know, and since neither of us knows, said Big Tiger, it's not at all clear. How far is Falling Wall from Ming Shui?
About 70 li, Christian estimated, or it might be 80. That's a day's journey with a camel, half a day on horseback, or 2 hours by car. But, of course, that depends on the road.
It can't be helped, said Big Tiger. There's always something we don't know.
Perhaps we'll find out, said Christian reassuringly. But though he thought hard, and though Big Tiger said, Greencoat is just resting a bit, it seemed to them improbable that he would need 5 days to do so.
When Moonlight shouted, Food! Food! And Where are the Sons of Heroes hiding? They gave up their reflections and went back to the tent. But on the way, a new question occurred to Christian, and he found it hard to wait for the meal to be over.
Dombit, who had been fasting so long that he could not eat much, told of his pilgrimage. He had spent more than half a year in the sacred city of Lhasa, and he described with great ardor and enthusiasm the glories he had seen and the wild, inaccessible mountain region in which the walled-up hermits lived. But he said no word about his own hardships. They were written on his face. All listened with rapt attention. But before Moonlight had time to say good night and sleep well, Christian burst out. May I ask what Falling Wall looks like? And when he noticed that everyone was speechless with astonishment, he added, Please forgive my ignorance.
I've never been there, said Dombit, but the captain will know, for it's in the frontier region.
We've only come here recently, Moonlight explained promptly. We really belong to the lifeguard of the old governor in Urumqi, as I mentioned before, and I think we should go to sleep now.
Sleep well, said Dampignac, and this put an end to all conversation.
Christian awoke when the camel man came to make the fire. Dampignac was sitting wrapped in meditation, his prayer beads gliding through his fingers. He had probably been sitting like that half the night. Christian did not dare to get up and say, Have you slept well? He waited until Moonlight awoke and in his brusque, cheerful way roused the sleepers and gathered them round the tea kettle. There was little talk. Dombit, the pilgrim, went out to offer a water sacrifice for the souls of the departed before sunrise. When he came back, Moonlight served tea and millet with butter. They could hear the camel men breaking up their tent and saddling the camels.
We're starting out presently, said Dampignac. You, Dombit, go with the two camel men. They will show you the way. But first, please take your rightful share of our provisions.
He stood up, and Dombit and the others followed him out of the tent. Dampignac's men had spread out all the provisions on a blanket, including the contents of Christian's and Big Tiger's saddlebags. They had divided them into 7 heaps of flour, millet, dried meat, and cheese, and 7 small portions of tea and salt. Dombit bowed to Dampignac. May your way be peaceful, was all he said. Then he went to his camel,
took down his empty saddlebag and filled in his portion of flour. The tea and cheese went into his sash pouch. He put the salt in a little wooden box, and he tied the dried meat behind on his saddle. Christian and Big Tiger looked on in surprise. Dampignac's men put away their own portions, and Christian's and Big Tiger's. "That's a rule of the Mongol Joss," Moonlight explained aside. "Genghis Khan's law prescribes that the traveler share honorably with the man who has nothing, and no thanks must be either asked or given."
"And do all Mongols follow this law?" asked Christian.
"Yes, all of them," said Moonlight. Dampignac remained standing beside Dombit, watching the preparations for departure. Christian and Big Tiger helped to dismantle the tents, but when they were about to load the camels, Dampignac cried, "Wait a minute," and walked over with Dombit to the place where the camels were lying.
"These four camels are mine, Dombit," he said. "I should like to exchange one of them with you for yours, because yours is young, and I like it. Will you therefore kindly choose which of these four you'd like best?"
"How can that be?" asked Dombit. "My camel is thin and weak."
"What I say holds," replied Dampignac.
At this, Dombit bowed shyly. "Many thanks. It has all turned out wonderfully," he murmured, and chose the worst of the four camels.
"Not that one," said Dampignac, and taking the strongest camel by the reins, he led it up to Dombit.
"Thank you, Dombit, for granting my wishes," he added. "May your journey be peaceful." With a slight bow, he turned and went up to his horse. Dombit looked after him.
"Don't let it worry you," said Moonlight, tapping Dombit on the shoulder. "That's the sort he is, you see. He's a chief."
"May your journey be easy and peaceful," said Christian and Big Tiger, and they followed Moonlight to where a man was holding the horses.
"Tongat hasn't come," said Dampignac. "I'll give him a piece of my mind," cried Moonlight, furious. "Is nobody to be relied on nowadays?" And he felt his pistol holster.
"Yabona!" cried Dampignac.
They all mounted. Dampignac bent over and spoke to his horse. The stallion shot forward and bounded up the hill, making the sand and stones fly.
"Say Yabona!" cried Dombit.
He was standing, waving, but suddenly he stopped short and went down on his knees in a kowtow.
"That's the horse of the Red Llama," he gasped,
and he was still kneeling as Moonlight, Christian, and Big Tiger rode past him, their whips raised aloft in a salute. The horses broke into a gallop, and the camels and the three men were soon left far behind. The early morning gave way to a radiant day. The sunlight gleamed on the black rocks. It was already getting warm, and the horses slowed down to a walk of their own accord. But when they reached the caravan road again, the stallion began to trot. Moonlight was in a bad humor. From time to time he looked up at the sun, then down at the tracks of Ma's caravan, and each time he muttered something menacing about Tongat's non-appearance. When the northern range of hills receded, giving way to a broad plain, Moonlight rode beside the venerable chief and exchanged a few words with him, ending with, "It can't be helped. I shall break his bones." Again, he meant Tongat. Very soon afterwards, they turned aside and dismounted. Moonlight hobbled the horses at the foot of a hill, and then they all climbed the hill, from which they had a fine view. The venerable chief withdrew. Moonlight sat down, and Christian and Big Tiger lay on their backs and looked up at the blue sky, thinking that they might perhaps spot some eagles or some little white clouds. But the sky remained blue, and soon they were both asleep. An hour passed, and the midday sun had reached its zenith, when Moonlight espied a distant rider galloping over the plain. It was Tongat. Moonlight wanted to slip down to the caravan road unseen, but the venerable chief held him back. "No breach of peace, little paw," said Dampignac. "Bring him to me. He must be heard first."
"As you wish," muttered Moonlight, but one could see he found obedience difficult.
When Tongat saw Moonlight's angry face, he felt like laughing. Obviously, he had no sense of guilt about his lateness. Then his glance fell on Christian and Big Tiger, whom he had noticed before, but had not taken for foreigners because they were wearing Mongolian clothes and riding boots decorated in brown and green with white-edged soles. But now Tongut stood staring from one to the other as if thunderstruck. Then he grasped his head to make sure he was not dreaming.
"I suppose you've never seen a foreigner before, little brother?" asked Moonlight in a friendly tone. Then he shouted, "Out with your report, good-for-nothing fellow!"
So absorbed was Tongut in observing the boys that he was thoroughly startled. He bent the knee before the venerable chief, saying, "I beg for forgiveness for coming late, but I couldn't help it. I did as my commander, Mr. Moonlight, ordered. Together with Bank, I accompanied Ma's caravan as far as Steep Rock Wall. We pitched camp there shortly before midnight. When everyone was asleep, I meant to ride off to report that the journey had been without incident. I had already got to my horse when the dogs began barking, and immediately afterwards, six strange horsemen with guns and a pack horse arrived. At first, I thought they were some of our people."
"Numbskull," cried Moonlight. "I told you none of our men were on the frontier."
"Go on, Tongut," said Dampignac quietly. "It was the frontier captain, Cao Cheng, who had arrived with five men," said Tongut. "He saluted me and asked me where the prince and the commander, Mr. Moonlight, were. He asked to be excused for crossing the frontier, but said that the great old governor in Urumqi had ordered him to go and search for two young sons of princes whom he had been expecting for a long time. Their names are Compass Mountain and Big Tiger."
"You see them here," said Dampignac.
"At that rate," replied Tongut, "it's no longer necessary to relay the frontier captain's request to oblige the old governor by joining in the search for the two young gentlemen. I begged the captain not to mention the matter to Ma, for I thought to myself it was more than likely that there was something behind it all."
"Your first sensible thought," growled Moonlight.
"Captain Cao Cheng remained in camp, so I had to remain too, for they had all wakened up, and I wanted to be sure that Cao Cheng would keep quiet about his assignment. At last, an hour ago, he rode back to the frontier with his men, and Ma will also set out soon for Ming Shui. I told him, 'I have lost my whip and must go look for it. I shall be back soon.'"
"You have done right all along," said Dampignac.
Tongut beamed. "May I inform Captain Cao Cheng," he asked, "that the two young sons of princes have been found? He's camping tonight at Stony Stream, as usual."
"Numbskull," cried Moonlight again. "Don't you realize that the matter is very secret?"
"Where will Ma camp?" asked the venerable chief quietly. "Ma says Stony Stream is not a good place for the camels. He's going to put up the tents near the old fortress. He says it's nice and level there, and that the ground is soft and without stones."
Moonlight nodded approvingly. He gave Christian and Big Tiger a sly wink, and the venerable chief said, "You may go over to Stony Stream tonight. Greet Captain Cao Cheng, and say to him, 'The prince sends greetings to the captain. He himself will come 3 hours before sunrise and present Compass Mountain and Big Tiger to the captain. And will the captain kindly keep a good watch on everything that happens until then? The prince will be grateful to him for this. Now go.'"
Tongut kowtowed to the prince. "I have heard your instructions," he said, "and no word will go unheeded." He saluted Moonlight, Big Tiger, and Christian, and hurried down the hill to his horse.
"Se yabona," cried Moonlight, mollified.
"Se yabona," repeated Christian and Big Tiger. Tongut flourished his gun in salute and galloped off. For 3 hours, Dampignac remained where he was, behind the hill. The caravan road lay bathed in sunshine, but nobody came the way, and Christian and Big Tiger felt the time dragging. They nibbled a bit of cheese, but as there was nothing to drink, they soon stopped. At the foot of the hill, the horses stood, their heads hanging. Moonlight had gone to sleep. At last, the venerable chief stood up. "The time has come, little paw," he said. They rode back to the caravan road at a leisurely pace. It was only when the terrain rose to the north that Dampignac gave the signal to trot. The space in front of the cliff was empty. Ma had gone on with his caravan, but the campfires were still smoldering. Around the well, the ground was wet with spilled water, and camel dung lay at even intervals in a neat row. An hour after their arrival, moonlight watered the horses. "What a pity," he said. "The water isn't good, and we have no tea kettle." "I've got something that will do," said Christian, taking out Tolis's copper flask. "It can be put straight into the embers," said Big Tiger. "We've boiled tea in it before." Moonlight was very pleased, for it was their last chance of eating before the next morning, he said. Christian and Big Tiger collected camel dung, and Moonlight revived one of the deserted campfires. As there were no sticks to make a tripod, he built up a little square with stones and placed the copper flask on top of it. They drank tea and ate dried meat and cheese, but when evening fell, the venerable chief said, "You would have done better to have slept." "We have slept, and we're fit as a fiddle," said Christian and Big Tiger. "So am I," said Moonlight. "Then," said Dampignac, "let the night's journey begin."